Okay? We are now going to understand how the acoustical impulse response measurements are performed. In this hour, we will talk of the traditional method employing truly impulsive source, like the pistol, which is now going through the classroom, or like balloons, like one, or we will see other kind of pulsive source, like the clapping machine. Okay. In the second hour, we will employ electroacoustical methods, employ the loudspeaker, playing a pair signal through the computer and recording the signal with a digital recorder. Well, really a digital recorder is also being employed with truly impulsive source. What is mostly used in this case is a recorder like this one. This is a very cheap digital recorder storing the data on a SD card, and after you perform the measurement, you insert the SD card in your computer and you get your recording stored as a WAV file. WAV file. WAV. So, impulsive sources. These are very practical. They provide a pulsive source which is very short in time. A good pulsive source creates a direct sound which is just 1 or 2 milliseconds long. Usually it is short enough for getting a quite clear separation between the direct sound, the first reflection, the second, the third, and so on. After a while, of course, the impulse response of the reflection start to merge together, creating a continuous reverberant tail. So you cannot easily separate anymore the single reflection. But the direct sound and the first couple of discrete reflection are usually well detectable with this kind of pulsive source. In this category, we have balloons, also very large balloons, or small ones, there are of any size. We have two now to make the test. These are small, of course. Or we can use a pistol shot. This is exactly the same pistol which is going around now, which is equipped with an omnidirectional diffuser on the top of the pipe. The frequency response of the balloons depend on their size. The bigger the balloon, the more energy you get at low frequency. Nevertheless, balloons are not nice pulsive sources. They don't have a flat spectrum. They are quite not omnidirectional. Even if you see a filled balloon to be more or less spherical, when you break it, it explodes in a very asymmetrical way. So the radiation of the sound pressure is absolutely not a spherical thing. So it's not a good test source, the balloon. It has almost been neglected nowadays. No one is using any more balloons. They have a lot of troubles. A much better pulsive source is a firecracker. Here you see an example of a firecracker explosion. Sorry, there is no codec for this video. I really don't know why, but boh. Let me see if I find the video manual. Excuse me. Okay. This is a firecracker in an open-air theater. It exploded and that's all. It is perfectly omnidirectional because it is very small, and when something is small, the sound radiated is always perfectly spherical because the source is much smaller than the wavelength. In time domain, the signal is very sharp and very short, here you see the firecracker compared with the decahedron loudspeaker, which is this one which you see here. This is a very nice electroacoustical source, very expensive. This source can cost up to 10,000 euros. So it is a very expensive source. The firecracker cost 2 euro a box of 20. So it's completely cheap. Nevertheless, the impulse of the firecracker is much sharper and better than the impulse created by the dodecahedron loudspeaker, as you see here. And also in terms of spectrum, you see the firecracker has a very nice and smooth spectrum, while the dodecahedron loudspeaker is very irregular, the spectrum. So in the end, nowadays firecrackers are considered the best truly pulsive source. They are cheap, they are small, you can buy everywhere in the world, so you don't have to carry them by home. For example, when flying on an aircraft, that kind of pistol is not allowed in the cabin of an aircraft. Instead, a firecracker you simply buy on site. You are going to Far East, to Africa, to United States, you go in any toy shops and you buy a box of firecrackers and you are done. Very easy, found everywhere, not expensive, nice spectrum, nice time domain signature. So probably the best pulsive source nowadays. Another very handy source is the clap machine, because those explosive-based sources, like the gun or like the firecracker, are not allowed in museums, in churches, or in certain special rooms where everything must be clean. You should not release smoke, you should not release dust or any kind, even the balloons. When they explode, you have this small piece of rubber on the floor. This is not allowed in certain rooms, very clean rooms. In these kind of clean rooms, the only pulsive source available is the clapping machine. The clapping machine, as you see, is very easy to build, either in wood or in plastic, like this. So you buy just two tables, you fix them with this kind of rotation device here. You can place some rubber, like in this case, for softening the impact when the two parts are hammered together. And you can get a quite nice spectrum. In a certain case, with this double structure, here there is a cavity, you see, with an hole. With this structure of this clapping machine, you get a lot of energy also at low frequency, which is not easy to get. The source is perfectly repeatable. You see here 12 pulses repeated. They are almost the same. So it's a very repeatable source, which the other pulsive source are not in general. The only problem with the clapping machine is the omnidirectionality, which is bad. As you see from this figure, the radiation at certain frequency is strongly polarized in some direction, so it is not a truly omnidirectional source. Here in the vertical plane, but again, you cannot say this is an omnidirectional source. Instead, the firecracker is. Here we see an example with the gun. The gun can be seen in more details here in the hands of my assistant. I was doing the recording with that recorder there. Here you see the impulse response in time domain. This room was the big classroom, the Aula Magna of Istituto Toschi here in Parma, or High School here in Parma, which has a lot of reverb, as you hear. Okay? The spectrum of the gun is not flat, it's bell-shaped, as you see here. And if you look at the impulse response measured at very low frequency, There is no good signal to noise ratio. You don't have a strong energy at low frequency. The situation becomes better at medium frequency. Now it's very nice. At 500 Hz is perfect. 1 kHz perfect also here. Thank you. And again, at very high frequency, the signal to noise ratio is not as good as medium frequency, but luckily enough, background noise is usually very weak at high frequency. So in practice, the problems are at low frequency, where the signal to noise ratio of the GaN is not enough. Instead, a big clapping machine or a big firecracker has a lot of energy at low frequency, so it can be used actually for performing impulse response measurements even at very low frequency. Let me talk a little about the microphone. In most cases, the microphone is the one of a sound level meter. It's a perfectly omnidirectional microphone. It is also called a pressure microphone. The ISO 3382 standard recommends the usage of small microphone with less than 13 mm diaphragm, so not large stadio microphone. The recorder here is equipped with four 12 mm diameter microphone mounted under the foam on the top. The frequency response of this kind of microphone is absolutely flat. The nice thing of omnipressure microphone is the very nice, perfectly linear frequency response. This is ideal for measurement. Some sound level meters, like this one, incorporate a digital recorder storing the WAV file on an SD card. Or you can use a recorder like this one, which is the same. Also, this contains an SD card, and you get the WAV file recorder on the SD. There are also other type of microphone. The ISO 3382 standard defines that instead of using omnidirectional microphone, you can also employ these two kind of microphone. Binaural, also called dummy head, because you have a torso and head in which the microphone are inside the ears. And this is done for emulating the way in which the human head and body really capture sound. Of course, our hearing system is not omnidirectional. This kind of device mimic the directionality of the human hearing system. The other possibility, more scientific, is to use this kind of variable directivity microphone, which can work with a variable pattern, rotating a ring. You can change the polar pattern of the microphone, and the standard requires to use the two extreme patterns, which are omni and figure of eight. The binaural recording can also be performed with a human head, employing this kind of small plug-in ear microphone. So those are so small that you can insert them in your ear duct and record the signal directly with your own head. This is very practical in many cases. Instead of carrying this dummy head, which is heavy and bulky, you already have a very nice head. You're right. And when you make a binaural recording with your own head, and you listen to this binaural recording with a kind of in-ear headphones, like the one of the iPod, for example, which replicate the sound inside the ear duct, you get exactly the same sound as if you was in the room where the recording was done. It's amazing, it's incredible. There is nothing as good to be listened by headphones. You close your eyes and you localize perfectly in space every sound source, the people talking around you. If you search for binaural on internet or on the App Store for your iPhone, you get very nice sample recording of binaural recording. If you hear to them by headphones, you experience this incredible spatial presence you get with the binaural technology. For acoustical measurement, instead, binaural measurements are not so good, because changing the head changes the response. So if three of you make the recording in the same point of this room, you get three different binaural responses. And everyone is perfect for the guy who made it, but for another is not perfect. So it's not a general type of recording. Then we are looking here at a more advanced recording technique, which is a four-channel recording technique. In this case, here we are seeing the origin of the ambisonics technology. This technique was invented by two guys, Gerson, who died in 96, and Craven, who is still alive. This is Michael Gerson, and this was the first prototype of what is called a sound field microphone. So you have four directive microphones capturing the sound from every direction. This is a more modern version of the sound field microphone. An even more modern version is here. This again is a sound field microphone with four capsules at the four vertices of a tetrahedron. By processing the signal of these four capsules, and the processing originally was done by an analog box like this one, nowadays is done on the computer with a software, with a FIR filtering again, convolution. So we apply digital filter to the signal coming from the capsule for deriving these four channels here. A signal composed of these four channels is called a B-format signal. The original signal from the capsule is called an A-format signal. So you go from A to B. A is the original signal of the capsule. You go through this black box and you get a B format, which is one channel perfectly omnidirectional, and this is pressure, of course, and three figure of eight channel pointing along the three Cartesian direction X, Y, and Z. Okay? You know the anthropometric reference system defined by the ISO organization tells you that the x-axis is always your nose, the y-axis is always your left ear, and the z-axis is always the top of your head. So if you orient three figure of eight microphones in these three directions, you get this three-directive Cartesian signal. These three channel directive are proportional to the Cartesian component of the particle velocity. You remember when we started this course, I explained to you that acoustic sound field is not only a field of pressure fluctuation, it's also a field of air motion. The air particles move and move with a velocity. The velocity is a vector. This kind of microphone probe not only captures the pressure, this one, but it also captures the directive Cartesian components of particle velocity. How well a sound field microphone behaves? This is an analog sound field microphone, is this one, which is not optimal actually. We measured in the anechoic room, and we have measured the polar pattern of this microphone. And at medium frequency, more or less, the polar pattern are the expected one. But at very low frequency, or very high frequency, first of all, they are not anymore gain matched, because the omnidirectional signal here is weaker than the directive one, and at very low frequency instead, the omnidirectional signal is too much loud compared with the directive channel. And then the polar chart are not perfectly round, not figure of eight, and not circular. They are distorted, spatially distorted. Here they are completely gone crazy. So actually, the theory is this one, but the practice is not as nice, at least with analog soundfield microphone. This one is a digital soundfield microphone. It performs much better in terms of this kind of polar pattern, because employing a digital filtering for doing the signal processing, at least the gain are always perfectly matched over the whole spectrum. Of course, at high frequency, you still get these funny shapes, because four microphones are not enough, they are too much far apart, their distance becomes comparable with the wavelength, and you get diffraction, resonance, and a lot of troubles. This is the evolution. The original analog soundfield microphone in the 70s was invented, this one. This is DPA-4, a much more modern re-implementation of the same concept, made in Denmark. DPA stays for Danish Pro Audio, one of the best brands of microphone. I would say the best, the absolutely best brand of microphone is DPA. This is Tetramic, an American system employing the same kind of China-made capsule which you see here, which are exactly the same capsule we are employing in the Brahma. The Brahma is a product of our spin-off of the university. It's made here in Parma. Here you see the Brahma unit with this wooden box, the zoom recorder, the microphone head. Okay. This is very cheap, of course. While a soundfield microphone, the original one, is 10,000 euros, this is 6,000 euros, this is 1,000 euros, as here with 1,000 euros you buy everything. The microphone pro, plus the recorder, plus the digital filter, plus the software for doing the filtering. So the price are going down and down on this kind of device. So this is how, what are the systems? Now what we do is to really use them. So what we do first is we chunk this recorder. I give it to one of you who volunteered to play the recorder. So for recording, you have to press the red button twice. On the first one, it is in focus. When you press again, it redirects. Okay? And keep it oriented towards the source. So keep this line, should be used to your phone. Should face the source. We are not going to use the pistol. First one, we are going to use the clapping machine. So start, say it loud, clapping machine inside the microphone. Say it.
Clapping machine.
Look if it doesn't overload. Look at the band.
No.
At what arise? Close to the maximum?
Near.
Okay. Stop. If you press the red one, it stops. Let me try with the balloons now. One moment, I have to fill them. Vorrei un beccuccio, perché si incolla. If one of you feel the second,
thank you.
send balloons.
Balloons.
Clip or no? There are four because it is four channels. So two frontal channel and two rear channel for each recording. Control C. Let me go here on the directory where we store. Okay, we start with the frontal channel of the recording and with the clapping machine. Okay, it looks nice. We can increase the gain for looking it better. Amplitude, normalize. Okay. Now it is easier to see.
Clapping machine.
Okay, clapping machine. And here we see the impulse response. So we can store this and call it clapping machine. Next week we will learn how to process this impulse response for computing acoustical parameters and particularly reverberation time and so on. For now, we are going to use them as filters for doing reverberation. Okay? It's almost good. Okay. Let me see the other one. The balloon. 12 front. Where are the balloons? Why? Too bad. The balloons are gone, and we don't have other balloons here. In fact, it's very short. Like if you press stop before. Let me listen to what happened.
Now
you press the recording on the computer. You didn't press twice the start. you pressed the second one at the end instead of stopping. I told you at the beginning. You have to press twice. The first time it goes in pause, and only with the second press it starts recording. The red light is blinking when it is in pause, and then you press the second time and you get fixed red. Sorry, I don't think I have other balloons. I don't know if some of you have some balloons. Look here. No. I don't know. There are someone, because no, it's a wrong
glow
for using the pistol. No? No. Also here in the lateral box. So. Okay. So we only have got the clapping machine. Sorry. Well, really the computer did the record, but retrieving that from the recording is not the thing. Okay, next time perhaps I will bring some other balloons when we are going to do the processing. So what we do now is to use this impulse response as a filter. We get which is what is called an anechoic recording. For example, an anechoic speech recording. I think I have one somewhere here on the computer. Yes. It's quite loud. This was the same original anechoic recording which was on the slides, you remember. This is dry, is recorded in a dry stereo recording with no room reflection. It was almost an anechoic room, so it's very dry. What we are now going to do is to convolve this recording with the impulse response of this room and perhaps with some other rooms if we want to make the comparison. First thing, we need to match the sampling frequency. This one is low frequency, is 22 kHz. We have to adjust the sampling rate to 48 kHz, which is the sampling frequency of this recorder. Now we get this impulse response, we copy to the clipboard, to the Windows clipboard, go here and convolve. We have a very nice convolution plugin called Convolve with Clipboard, and this convolution plugin is actually performing frequency domain partition and convolution between the original sound and your impulse response. It takes no time, you have seen 0.1 second for processing a 20 second recording. So much better than real time. It takes a really short computational time. And here you hear the same recording reverberated by this room. Now we load the impulse response of a church. This one is the impulse response of a large cathedral in Foligno. With a reverberation time of more than 3 seconds. It's not like this room, which is dry, more or less. This is a very reverberant church. So we make a number of undo. Undo, undo, undo. This is again the original dry one. And now we are going to convolve with Foligno impulse response. Edit, copy, convolve with clipboard. You see how long is the reverberation. Here is 3 seconds and it's not finished yet. It's more than 3 seconds. Again, the computation time is nothing. And here you listen to the reverberated signal. Can use your measured impulse response as reverberation filters for adding reverberation to dry stereo recording. This is a technology which has been invented more than 10 years ago and which is now widely employed in recording studio or in television or in cinema for creating this impression that the recording was done inside a church, inside a theater, inside a train station or a similar large reverberant space. If not, you hear a very intimate voice recorded in the dubbing studio, while the action in the film, for example, is in a completely different environment, and it does not sound natural. You can also create artificial reverberation with other technology, which are nowadays obsolete, because what is better than reality? By definition, nothing. With this kind of impulse response convolution, you really create the real reverb of a real room. So those electronic reverberation unit or similar device were popular in the 80s when the computational power available on computer was not enough for performing real-time convolution, but particularly the efficient partitioned convolution algorithm was not known yet. Actually, it is a very old algorithm because it was invented in 67 at MIT in Boston. But for more than 20 years, no one did know about this algorithm anymore. And at the beginning of the 90s, it started to be employed again. An Australian company called Lake DSP attempted to patent this algorithm. You know that in Australia, like in the United States, you can have a patent also on an algorithm, not only on a physical device like here in Europe. And they succeeded in getting this patent on convolution. They patented convolution. So for at least 10 years, the technique was ready. They were selling convolution unit on the market, but no one else was able to use it for the patent. At the end, the patent was broken because the prior art was found in the archives of MIT in Boston. So it was proven that the algorithm was now well in advance than the Lake patent, and now everyone can use this technology, and a lot of software houses are selling plugins for audio workstation for doing this kind of convolution reverb. If you look on the internet, you find very huge collection of impulse responses measured in the most famous theaters all around the world. Also, I participated in this project with an Israeli-based company called Waves. If you go on the Waves website, you find a plugin for doing convolution, which is called IR1, Impulse Response 1. That was the first. And the collection of theater accompanying this plugin contains a lot of theaters measured by me and my staff. Not only in Italy, we also went in Japan, in Australia, in the United States, and in many other sites, in Spain, for measuring impulse response of famous venues, concert hall, and so on. So it was very nice to do this research which ways. And this technology of impulse response convolution is now quite standard in recording studio. Okay? Stop here for 10 minutes. Thanks.